The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And we have a guest that we're going to kick things off very early this morning. I just read this, I gave you guys the headlines in the newspaper on page 6 this morning of our Guardian, where the business groups call for calm as Caracas ends gas deals with Trinidad and Tobago. The Confederation of Regional Business Chambers Chairman Vivek Charan is on the line with me this morning. Good morning, Vivek. How are you this morning?
Good morning. Good morning. Nice to be on your program this morning. Thanks for having me.
Beautiful, beautiful. Let's get right into it. Venezuela's decision to suspend gas arrangements agreements with Trinidad and Tobago has prompted calls for calm diplomacy and renewed economic focus from the local business leaders. Let me get your thoughts on this. Now, the gas deal has not ended, so to speak, but suspended. That's the words used. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts exactly are that things are becoming a bit out of hand. I think there's a lot of rumor and there's a lot of misinformation out there, and there's a lot of politicizing of the current situation. What's happening now is diplomatic rhetoric. And there's a lot of diplomatic rhetoric happening between, I think, all three parties, between America, Venezuela, and Trinidad and Tobago. With regard to the Dragon gas, there's no clear path to Dragon gas. There's no clear path. The idea that Venezuela, or the Venezuelan government, let's say, had all the power and all the cards to grant gas deals and to grant access or license to the Dragon field was disproved. So the previous government was dealing directly with the Maduro government. And at the turn of the election in the United States, when Donald Trump, the president of the United States, assumed power, that was the end of that. So Dragon at that point in time was dead. The Kamala Prasad government, new government in Trinidad and Tobago, they started dealing directly with Marco Rubio. They started dealing directly with the Trump administration. And through the Trump administration, the OFAC license was granted. Now, when we look at that, who really seemed to have the negotiating power to open the door to Dragon Gas? It didn't seem to be the Maduro government. It seemed to be the American government. The second thing is, you know, other than dwelling on exactly what is happening in Trinidad and Tobago alone, this is a much larger, you know, there's something much larger. I believe that we're on a pivotal moment in history. We're standing on the edge of a pivotal moment in history. Seeing all these assets moved into the area from America and so on. Apparently, Maria Machado is actually in Venezuela, which I saw on a newscast some time ago. I've also seen the President of the United States himself in a press conference saying that Venezuela has been trying to make concessions to them, right, or with them. One of the things is they also offered the Americans, access to gas fields and oil fields and so on. So there's much that is happening behind the scenes directly with Venezuela and America that we also don't 100% know, and it's unclear. But the truth of the matter is that there is no certainty, 100% certainty, with Dragon Gas. Do we need access to the Dragon Gas fields? Yes, we do. Will it make a change to economic circumstances in the medium to long term? Yes, it will. It may even bolster confidence to a certain degree in the short term. But as it stands, there is no clear path. So, you know, so when the Prime Minister said that, we're not dependent on Dragon Gas, she is in a sense right. We should not put all our eggs in one basket because it is uncertain what is happening with Dragon Gas. However, the government of Trinidad and Tobago would be remiss if they also did not pursue all avenues which could allow them to operate in the Dragon fields.
You know, you mentioned something, and I want to get back to this very quickly. Your thoughts as it relates to the fact that the former administration dealt directly with the Maduro regime. Do you think they erred? And if so, why? The question is, do you think that the past prime ministers and former energy minister erred in dealing directly with that? Because I am asking you this. Remember, you mentioned two things. One, a license was granted under the Biden administration. And we heard about this NDA that was looming around between Dr. Rowley, former Prime Minister, also Minister Energy of Energy, Minister of MP Young now. And they all had this NDA in place where they couldn't tell us what the deal was. One had to wonder that when the former Prime Minister went to Jamaica, met with Marco Rubio, and that deal, he had to give them the details, came to the fore. The Americans decided, nah. Because remember, we don't know what the deal was. Do you think that the past administration erred by doing so? And if so, why?
In hindsight, yes, they erred. Because one of the main principles of negotiation is to ensure that you are actually dealing with the people who have power to make decisions. And maybe on the surface, or maybe they were misled into thinking that the Venezuelan government could have operated on their own or independently when it came to the granting of the licenses. However, once American companies are involved, once American dollars are involved, obviously America is going to be part of the arrangement. And so, you know, I looked on, and many other people looked on, because at the end of the day, you were dealing with a socialist government whose policies caused some 7.5 to 8 million Venezuelan people to flee Venezuela and to, to migrate to different parts of the globe, causing mass issues when it came to migration and people, coming into other countries and so on. All from Guyana to Colombia, Trinidad and Tobago, we're said to have, close to 50 or 60 here, all the way up to Spain, Madrid, Spain. It created a crisis in a sense. And yet this was the government that you were dealing with, a government that was already, in bed or in inverted commas with superpowers like China and Russia. As a matter of fact, it's said that Russia is already operating in some of the fields near Dragon Field. You have a situation as well too where, everyone's upset that the American boat, the American warship battleship came to Trinidad. But Venezuela had Russian bombers land in Caracas. Venezuela had warships from the northern Russian fleet dock at Caracas. It was said that they were also doing military exercises with them. Otherwise, why would they have? Why would Russian ships from the northern fleet dock there? So, Venezuela's stance has always been one of belligerence. And this belligerence even reached uncomfortable situation when Maduro suddenly decided that the S part of the Essequibo is Venezuela's, and we are going into Essequibo, and they amassed a certain amount of military presence on the border, and they announced that they're going to settle and they're going to send people, Venezuelan citizens, into Essequibo. So, it's funny that CARICOM has hit back at Trinidad and Tobago. And yet, if it was that Venezuela had remained unchecked as it is with their belligerence, bringing foreign military assets into the Caribbean first, right? And also, this belligerence with Guyana and so on, it could have led to a situation where, in any case, CARICOM would have had to have made a stance when it came to Guyana. What would that stance have been? Would that have been a stance of neutrality? If it was that Venezuela had, in fact, begun to plant a foot into the Essequibo, what would have then been the situation? So, in a sense, even though there's much criticism for it, the American presence in the area brings a certain amount of stability rather than the instability that everyone is you know, not everyone, but rather than the instability that many people seem to feel, that is about the instability within the region has always been from Venezuela. We cannot deny, right? We cannot deny that we have a crime problem. We cannot deny, right, that we had a human trafficking problem with people fleeing from Venezuela. Of course, they would flee to Trinidad and Tobago. Trinidad and Tobago get a job. We have actually treated Venezuelan migrants, I would say, quite decently. You know, many of them are actually working, married to Trinidad people. They've been here for a while. Secondly, we cannot deny that there was a major, there was a major trade in contraband between Venezuela and Trinidad and Tobago. The Guardia Nacional never shut down the contraband trade. The Guardia Nacional wasn't stopping Trinidad boats from going and picking up people and bringing them back. The Guardia Nacional wasn't stopping any of the trade in anything from animals, exotic animals and pets that were coming across to guns and, you know, whatever else that contraband trade was. And neither could we really stop it. Now that the presence of the boats are there and there's all this happening, I would say that to a large extent it has ceased. But the fact is, what damage was done to Trinidad and Tobago in terms of guns coming into to our country, right? And so there's a sense that many of the issues that started to arise when the economy of Venezuela hit rock bottom, as it were, right? Let's say the economic fallout led to what the economists call externalities. And some of those externalities are the negative effects that were visited on neighboring countries and Trinidad as well. They have been basically unable to stop it. We haven't really put our foot down to say we have stopped Venezuelan migrants coming into Trinidad and Tobago. We really haven't, I would say. We haven't really been able to stop the flow of contraband goods and guns and things into the country either. No, at this point in time, it has. And the thing is, when we look at the situation, when we look at the number, the volume, and the expense associated with moving all these American assets, American military assets into this area, we then, you know, something has to give. And I think they've reached the point of no return because, the President of the United States isn't, I don't think the President of the United States is simply going to signal that, let's pack up and leave. Let's pack up, we've done what we could here. We've made our point. Let's all sail back to America. I don't think that that's actually going to happen. You know what I mean? Because then it would be a win for Maduro. Maduro would say, hey, I stood up to America and, their ships, we sent their ships back. This government is strong and the government we stand up to the imperial might of the United States. And I don't think that that's going to happen because it's going to, I don't think that's going to happen.
My apologies, I didn't mean to cut you.
Okay.
You made some very, very startling revelations and sent some very timely reminders to the mind of our listening audience. Now, one person is saying, to ask Mr. Vivek, when the entity starts investing money into a country where the oil is found, is it the country or the investing company has more distribution rights to the product, being that the entity has invested heavily into finding and production?
Well, they're right. I mean, if, for example, the government would have to negotiate the same way our government does, right? Our energy sector is comprised of, foreign multinationals. We have BP, TT down here and dealing with, and in Guyana, there's Shell. There are many other multinational companies. And no doubt, once the Dragon Field is open and so on, and people have to operate there, no doubt that they would have to deal with American multinational companies, oil exploration and oil and gas-based companies. So yes, at the end of the day, You know, your listener is correct that they would. And you see, the thing is, I think the government has done the right thing. And let me tell you, let me explain why. This is a much larger situation than people believe it is. And one that can affect each and every one of us citizens here that have visas or do business with the United States. So let's talk about when you have existing treaties in place. And we do have an existing treaty in place, right? Which was aired on the media and so on and all that. With regard to the ships coming here, as a matter of fact, we're part of the Trade Winds exercise. In 2024, there was a Trade Winds exercise in the Caribbean, which, you know, funnily enough, those CARICOM countries like Barbados and Grenada and others took part in with the Americans, right? Which was a kind of naval-based exercise. Now, going back to what I said, when we look at the current situation with cooperation with a country, what happened last year, if you remember, between the UK and Trinidad and Tobago, was that the UK revoked our visa free travel status. They revoked it. Now, to travel to the UK, to London, you have to purchase a visa, basically, and it can get quite expensive. I checked it out. You know, it can run all the way up to £700, which works out close, I would say, to $7,000 mm-hmm. Depending on the type of visa that you take, right? That would be the most expensive one. Other than that, if you're traveling with your family and so on, it could be a lot more. And why did that happen? Do you know why that happened? That happened because it is alleged, or what came to us through the media and what we've heard, is that when certain gang leaders were trying to gain asylum, to migrate to the UK, the UK government asked for a list of individuals, a list of persons of interest, and the government at the time refused to cooperate with them. And based on what happened there, our visa-free travel status was revoked. And you see, that is the kind of thing that happens when you're dealing with larger countries, and you're dealing with countries you consider allies, and at that point in time, you don't cooperate. So let's say that we took a negative position. As, you know, on social media, many people are saying we should not support this, and we should be remain neutral and all that sort of thing. Neutrality in this case means not cooperating, right? Even though we have a treaty and so on that allows for cooperation with certain military type assets and so on. But let's say that we didn't do that. We have a significant amount of people in Trinidad and Tobago that have American visas, right? I have no right to American visa. It is a privilege granted to me by the government of America. We have significant amount of people in Trinidad with green cards. We even have people in Trinidad that have dual citizenship, not to mention the amount of persons in Trinidad that have family in America, right? Let us move now to business. Think about when you go to the supermarket, all our food distribution companies that bring down all those American-type products, from Butterball, that whole Butterball line, to, you know, you name it, whatever it is, right? All those snacks, M&Ms and confectionaries and whatever, all the different types of meats and so on, right? Think about all our local distribution food companies that bring in products. Think about all our air condition companies that bring in, products and stuff like that from America and many other things. So just suppose now that our non-cooperation with them led to a negative effect, the same way that a simple request to provide a list of persons of interest, you know, gang leaders and that sort of thing, to the UK government was not agreed upon. If we were to say, well, we are neutral and we don't want your ships docking here, we want no part of this, whatever, how can it affect the citizens? How could it affect if all of a sudden Trinidadian citizens were unable to get their visas renewed? How would it be when green card citizens, when they fly across, they are told, are turned back and said, no, well, you know, your green card status is no longer valid. How would it be if it affected our trade with America in terms of the products and the current supply contracts to many conglomerates and that many conglomerates have and distribution companies? Do you understand these things? You know, so if a government decides that we're going in a particular way, like CARICOM kept saying, you know, this is a zone of peace and you shouldn't have this. And many people went and, you know, was talking to Al Jazeera. Many people were talking to Al Jazeera and other news outlets and spinning a different line. The reality is that could have affected us. All of a sudden, the United States could have decided, well, we're going to slap 20% tariffs on them, right? I mean, what is neutrality? And the time for neutrality, in a sense, has passed. Neutrality means not cooperating. Neutrality means, despite America being considered our ally, despite having certain treaties with America, we decide that we are not going to honor that. We're not going to honor, and we are going to not cooperate on this Venezuelan situation, which in a sense, right, means that we are supportive of the Maduro regime. And what has support for the Maduro regime really given us?
Well,
it has only given us lots and lots of Venezuelan citizens who have fled to our country.
Not only right? that, just to chime in there quickly as we edge closer to 7 o'clock, siding with Venezuela or taking a position with Venezuela has seen us lose out on our OFAC license. Now, you mentioned a lot of things, and I thank you very much for it, for your thoughts on it. As it relates to the visas and the type of trading, business and otherwise. Because when the UK imposed the visa fee on us, you're correct, it can range up to 10,000 TT dollars. If you're traveling with your wife, your husband, your children, your mother, that by three, and that is just for access. You ain't getting
yeah,
ticket.
That's my situation. I mean, there's five of us, so I, in a sense, you know, travel to the UK for me is not prohibitive. I mean, that's a sad thing.
It is.
You understand?
Especially since we mimic the Westminster system from our parliament. We rely on the law lords of London for the Privy Council seems to be our final resting place for legal matters outside of the CCJ, which was created for that. So if we mimic and rely heavily on the UK and we see what happened, where the former Minister Brown was caught with his pants in the washing machine, as it were, with this U.S. visa thing, which nothing could have been done. Apparently, there were conversations where he said that there were talks on it. But outside of that, let's get back to the matter of hand. What is the Chamber's position right now, Mr. Chairman, on as it relates to how the Prime Minister should thread going forward with this new development of the deal being suspended?
I, you know, with regard to our chamber, the general consensus is that the cooperation with America is not a bad thing. We don't disagree with it, one. The second thing is we understand the importance of Dragon Gas, the Dragon Gas fields to our economy. However, the Dragon Gas fields, at the end of the day, is a long, medium to very long-term, you know, outlook and its possible effects on the economy. There is, at this present point, no clear path. We have been granted an OFAC license, but then who granted us the license? The people who granted us the license is not the Maduro regime or the vice president of Venezuela. The people who granted us was the Trump administration through Marco Rubio. And so if it is that we have been granted, you know, this OFAC license from them, that we decide to take an antagonistic position with them, what do you think is going to happen? Right? So who is showing to us that they have the ability and the power to deliver Dragon Gas at this point in time? But other than that, the Prime Minister said that, you know, our country is independent on that.
But isn't the Prime Minister...
But our country would be better off for it. But the reality is, it is not certain. So our economic trust, right, really has to be to do what can be done in the short term and the medium term, assuming that Dragon Gas is not going to happen. So she's right in that regard. So we have to continue to try and push our manufacturing sector. We have to continue to try and push exports as much as we can, foreign exchange revenue generation, what the economists call, you know, trade and non-tradables, which is anything other than the energy sector. But, you know, but, we have to do what we need to do.
But, Chairman, outside of that, do you think that, was it not, how to put it? Let's look at the fallout with CARICOM right now. Our CARICOM neighbors are basically against us. They are saying that we took a position. Wouldn't it have been prudent enough? This is how the Prime Minister went up to the United States and chatted with Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, to get this. Shouldn't she have called or attended the CARICOM heads of government meetings and sit with them, let them know the position of the Trinidad and Tobago government, what is happening on our shores, why this must be done, or why she feels this way, rather than remain silent, do what she did, and then isolate or oust us from the CARICOM nationals, CARICOM nation?
As far as I see it, Trinidad and Tobago government needs to put Trinidad and Tobago citizens first. Trinidad and Tobago government needs to put the Trinidad economy first. Many people, including myself and my own business, have been struggling over the last 10 years. You know, being on good terms with CARICOM, when it can put us in a negative situation with larger allies, with larger markets that we hope to export to, with people who are already supporting us, larger countries that are supporting us in many ways, aid included, all that sort of thing, is not going to augur well for us. It's not going to augur well for citizens. It's not going to augur well for economy as well, too. Okay. I don't think that this disconnect with CARICOM is going to be, you know, an enduring one. At the end of the day, if out of this there is a free, stable, and democratic Venezuela that many of the Venezuelan citizens can return to, and a Venezuelan economy that starts to rebuild itself to its former glory, given all the wealth of resources that it has at its disposal, that the current Maduro regime was unable to enrich its own people with, right? They enrich themselves in a sense. But if that were to happen, the benefits to Trinidad and CARICOM at large is going to far outweigh where they are now.
All right. Let me take one call so our persons are trying to get in. Whoa.
Good morning.
Very quickly, please. Good morning.
Mr. Charon, since you said very quickly, I cannot engage you on everything, but I just want to say I find your position to be wrong. I find your analysis to be poor. And I find your outlook for the future economy of Trinidad and Tobago to be quite misinformed. At this point in time, we are in a situation whereby Trinidad could be scarred for the next century as being involved in a military incursion into a neighboring state where people can die. It can bring death and destruction. Our marine resources, where all of our hydrocarbon resources are, the Point Lisas, the Point Appear, the Point 14, all of those could be in jeopardy of destruction and decimation because of our stupid position. And I find your analysis to be poorly informed and very much skewed.
All right. Thank you very much. What do you expect will to happen with us teaming up with the U.S., Mr. Chairman? What are your expectations?
I think that people are living this, like, you know, the caller. Respectfully, I disagree with the caller. I think that my analysis is not wrong. I think that we have to stand with our allies. I do not think that this is going to lead to a war in which missiles are going to fly. Who is going to fire the first volley? Is that how America works? Do you think that that's what's going to happen with Venezuela? That all of a sudden, in the seas between Trinidad and Venezuela, there's going to be a massive firefight and whatever. That's not what's happening here. What's happening here is maybe heavy-handed diplomacy, yes. But what's happening here is not directly going to lead, I think, to any direct war.
All right.
So based on that, right? Based on that, based on all the points that I made about how travel and business between America and Trinidad can be affected, right? And this fear that the people have, and the fear is also coming from social media, the fear is also coming from the opposition and the things that they're saying to raise all of this, all of these issues and make people think that war is imminent and
but
bad things are going to happen. I honestly do not think that that's where we're headed.
So given the fact of history, of America's history when it comes to these kind of things, and we look at Saddam Hussein and other things that happened globally, not just under the Trump administration, but on American government as a whole, do you think that Donald Trump, based on your research and what you have been seeing playing out the geopolitical landscape, that Trump will hold his hand and not invade Venezuela?
I think that part of the new American administration's policy for this Caribbean area is to secure the Caribbean area, away from foreign influences, particularly those from Russia and China.
Why didn't go behind Colombia and go behind their mothers?
If we look at what happened in Panama, when the Trump administration came in. The Trump administration came in, some heavy-handed diplomacy again, but at the end of the day, they believed that the Panama Canal was managed and thereby controlled by certain Chinese interests. Negotiating with the Panama authorities and the Panama government, they were able to sort that out and remove the Chinese interests that were managing the canal at both ends.
All right.
After that, they seem to have turned their attention to Venezuela and the fact that Venezuela inviting foreign ships and all that sort of thing into. So, you know, my thing is, so why nobody freak out why not the outrage when Venezuela say we're going to take the Essequibo? Why not the outrage when it had Venezuelan bombers landing in Caracas? I'm sorry, Russian long-range bombers flying all the way from Russia to the Caribbean? Why it is no outrage when Russian warships was cruising into Caracas? You understand? Why no outrage when we know that the gangs in Trinidad, connected to gangs and negative bodies and things in Venezuela, bringing in guns here and bolstering up our gangs, in which we have a major problem? Why not the outrage for that? You understand what I'm saying? So,
I have to go. Okay, time is approaching. All right. What if the Americans was to engage Venezuela in an act of warfare? This is a heavy-handed approach that they are taking, according to you. They are taking the fight to the narco trafficking elements. Maduro has been accused of $50 million U.S. has been placed on his head. He has been accused of being a drug lord. If that does happen, if they do invade Venezuela, how are we in Trinidad and Tobago to fare when it comes to if a war is to break out between the United States and Venezuela? How are we to fare as we are 7 miles away from the coast? Very quickly.
If a war were to break out between Venezuela and Trinidad, the reality is, who would you want as your ally?
All right. That's a good question. But let me ask you this final question. What do you think should be done now as the business group, say you're part of it, calling for calm? What do you think the prime minister should do now in light of the recent developments with the deal being pulled off the table from Maduro's standpoint and the U.S. position against the Maduro regime?
I am pretty sure that the prime minister of the country and the government of the country is being informed by the American government. I believe that the American government have a plan in place as to exactly what they're going to do. I believe that there are a lot of negotiations happening behind the scene between the Maduro regime and the Trump administration. I believe there are a lot of things at play. And the best thing that the people of Trinidad and Tobago can do, rather than, keep... You know, the sad thing is that in the midst of this, and this, and this is illustrative of a problem that we have. In the midst of what is happening right now, we are in conflict. And who are we in conflict with? We are in conflict with ourselves.
All right.
All we're doing every day is, you know, all this
fear-mongering
and negativity and that sort of thing, rather than saying, let's come together, let's be calm, and let's see, you know, what's happening out there, because we can't have it all, boy.
All
we can't have Trinidadians saying, and have too much Venice working here, and the Venice need to go, and the Venice this, and the Venice that, and Trinidad had to come first. We can't have people saying, our energy sector is a mess, and unless we get the energy sector back up and going, we're not going to be getting U.S. anymore, and we're not going to be in a good situation.
I have to pull the plug on the interview now and tell you thank you very much, Chairman Vivek Charan, the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers. The thing is, news is up next, and I thank you very much.
We
definitely will chat again in the not-too-distant future as we continue with dialogue, as we watch what is taking place geopolitically with this tension between U.S. and Venezuela. Thank you again, and have a safe and productive day.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.